And now, Move the Sticks, the 10 Takeaways podcast with Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, and a true gamer who is powering through an Uber-induced thumb injury, Rhett Lewis.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, we're back. It is DJ. Bucky's going to join us shortly, and apparently somebody who can't safely get in and out of an Uber. Now, what the heck are you doing, Rhett?
Where did we get this information from?
What I want to know. We're scouts.
Oh, my
goodness. We're scouts. We know how to dig on background information. What did you do?
Well, the guy rolled up my thumb in the window as I was opening the door. And then he thought I was kidding when I was yelling, so he just left it there. And so, I had to, reach through with my other hand and roll it down myself. I still can't feel my thumb. Now, I'm in better shape than Drew Brees is right now.
Than Drew Brees. Yeah. It's going to lead us right into the top of the show here. But by the way, we've got our takeaways coming up. Bucky's going to join us in a little bit via Trees Traveling. So he's coming in, driving in. So we're going to get a couple takeaways from him here in a little bit. A lot to get to talking about these games and our big takeaways. But before we get to those takeaways, and now that we've solved the mystery of how you got hurt in an Uber, The big news, obviously, Drew Brees with the thumb. Looks like surgery. Talking, I guess, timeline so far.
Yeah.
I think I saw Chris Mortensen save 6 weeks, I guess, is what they're saying.
Yeah, rap sheet as well.
Yep. Big Ben with an elbow. Yeah, Big Ben with an elbow injury to see. He has a decision to make today, I guess, whether or not he's going to have surgery. So pretty significant, I would say, with those two guys.
Huge. And, look, I watched really kind of from beginning to end on the – Saints-Rams game. It was obviously one of the more compelling matchups of the day coming in. And, I mean, just seeing that for Drew, I mean, he was, obviously just so visibly distraught. It's like he didn't know what to do with himself on the sideline. A guy who's only missed one game in 13 years with the Saints. So, look, that one to me is a little more disturbing because of, just how much they rely on Drew Brees. Whereas you saw Mason Rudolph come in and played pretty well for the Steelers. I mean, the interception was on Dante Moncrief, if you're asking me.
Easy.
Come on.
Easy. Was
you
a flea
it?
Flicker? How many yards were the flea flicker?
Well, it is what it is. Threw a nice touchdown pass, too. So, come on.
All right. Well, hey, he's going to get his opportunity.
Yeah.
Mason Rudolph's easy to root for. He's such a good dude. So, yeah. I'm anxious to see what he does. Hey, how he's going to get a chance, it looks like, potentially for a while.
And then back on Brees here real quick. Look, if I'm Sean Payton, and, all due respect to Teddy Bridgewater, but I'm considering Taysom Hill.
Oh, Taysom Hill, this
offense, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
No doubt. And they've got a defense.
Yeah.
They've got a defense that can keep you in games. So, to me, I think you morph. It's not the same. It's not the same thing. But I think you go back and look at, I think it was Adam Gase, right, when he was with Denver. When you had the little Tebow run there.
Yeah.
And obviously completely altered the offense towards Tebow. That'd be tempting. I mean, Michael Thomas won't like it, but that would be something I would consider because you can just try and run the ball, play great defense, and hold down the fort till Brees comes back.
Right. And so the only problem, it's not a true problem if you're going to say, hey, we're going to roll with Taysom Hill, but look, the guy's a core special. He's on every special team, right? He's out there, so you got to figure that out too. And then he's still a big part of the offense outside of the fact, if he wasn't playing quarterback. So then you got to kind of scrap that whole side of things. And then, as you said, just completely remold what they want to do. But it might be worth it to kind of hold serve until Drew.
And switching over to the Steelers, I know this is obviously, we are very early on in the season. But, I know you've got the injury now, and you just look at kind of where this team is situated. You're in that division. Baltimore's the only team that's 2-0. You've got Pittsburgh at 0-2, the Bengals at 0-2, the Browns with a big game coming up against the Jets. They should win, you assume. They'd be 1-1, but it looks like Baltimore's got a chance to run away and hide inside this division. And Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't know if you could think of a worse start for this team. When you look what they have coming up at the 49ers, who are 2-0 and playing good football right now, the Bengals at home, which is always a rivalry game there, which we'll see what happens there. Then they go Ravens at Chargers. So this could get away from the Steelers real quick, especially with this injury to Roethlisberger.
Well, and the other thing we'll just have to keep monitoring is, I'm looking at 81 rushing yards for the Steelers in this one. time of possession, they got dominated in this game. Just 24 minutes of TOP for the Steelers. I mean, and again, the thing I was talking about for monitoring is, the Mike Munchak effect. Is that still going to play a part, as we continue down this season? So Yeah, man, they've got a tough stretch ahead.
All right, let's jump into these takeaways here. I'll start us off.
Please.
The game that I was at, the Lions were saved by red zone defense.
Rivers takes the snap. Three-man rush for Detroit. Rivers, long look into the end zone. It is intercepted by the Lions. Intercepted by Darius Slay. He's got it. Picked it off in the end zone. Oh, Darius, young man, you did it again. You did it again.
Dan Miller.
So remind me again, was that the Lions call or the Chargers?
Was that money?
Call?
It didn't sound like money.
Well, look, this was a game. This was a weird game. And this is a game looking at, you know, from the Chargers side of things. You come into this game with no Michael Badgley, your kicker.
Right.
Russell Kuhn, your left tackle, is not playing. Obviously, Melvin Gordon's not there. Hunter Henry's not playing. Mike Williams is out there on one leg. Mm-hmm. You go to the defensive side of the ball. Everybody knows about Derwin James not being there. And then during the game, his backup, Adrian Phillips, ends up breaking his arm. He's out of the game. Michael Davis, your starting corner, does not play. I mean, it was just a litany of injuries and guys not playing in this game. And yet, the Chargers, for the most part, dominated this football game and moving the ball in the second half up and down the field, but had nothing to show for it. And that's why my takeaway was this red zone defense. How many times do you see when you get a big player, you get down inside the 5-yard line or down inside the red zone, and you almost see a fait accompli with the defense, and then it just kind of gets in the end zone? When you look at the Lions, you know, Austin Ekeler tried to leap over the pile for the second time. First time he scored, second time the Lions meet him, force the fumble at the 1-yard line. And then at the play you just listened to with Darius Slay picking off a ball in the end zone. I mean, that's the football game right there. And it shows you the importance of you can give up yardage, and we'll talk about this in another game coming up, but you can give up all the yardage you want between the 20s. Man, if you can buckle down, get stops, and in this case, even turnovers, you win a football game.
Deej, look, we know where Matt Patricia came from. Does that not feel like a Patriots defense from a few years ago? You know what I mean?
There you go.
Top five in scoring defense the last 5 years for a reason, right? Patriots are. I mean, that's what it felt like to me when I was watching that game. Like, they're just finding a way to keep points off the board, you know? And you're absolutely right there.
Well, it also helps when the backup kicker, you know.
Yeah, we missed two field goals.
Poor guy, man.
Yeah.
Misses two field goals, and you have to. I almost kind of wonder, you try and climb inside Phillip Rivers' head a little bit on that interception, if he's sitting there thinking, hey, if I don't put this thing in the end zone, I don't want to put this ball in the hands of our backup kicker. I don't want to make excuses for Rivers, but that it was a interesting decision to try and attack on that play right there instead of playing conservative.
Sure. I'm with you on that as well. You want me to take us to two?
Get us going here. What do you got?
Kellen Moore will be a head coach in 2020.
Prescott under center, second down, 6. With a play fake to Elliott. He's got a lot of time deep to the middle. He's got a man to the middle of the field. It's caught, and it's in for the touchdown to Devin Smith. How about that?
Well, that's another story. Devin Smith? What? back in the end zone for the first time since, like, 2015?
I'm so glad I can. I'm still held on to that report. It's under my bed right
now.
Okay, all right. I've hidden it from sight, but I could be reemerging at some point in time.
With you on that one. What was he second round to the Jets?
Second round of the Jets.
Right. Okay. Anyway, back to
Kellen. Some idiot said he was kind of like DeSean Jackson, but I don't know who that idiot was.
Well, we saw it at Ohio State. Look, all you can go off is the tape. Geez. So here we go. The tagline there is, look, unfortunate for the Cowboys, unless, of course, he ends up taking Jason Garrett's place. But, I mean, look, Kellen Moore, in his first season calling plays, has called two terrific games. Look at this one just this week against the Redskins. Outside of a rough first quarter for Dak Prescott, also credit to him for bouncing back in that one. After the interception, he was near perfect. 30 attempts for Dak Prescott. You know the story. When he goes over 30, it's trouble. 25 total touches for Ezekiel Elliott, 23 rushes. He goes over 100. I mean, it is as perfect a balance as you could ask for if you're a Cowboys fan or a Cowboys member of that organization, because that's how they win football games. And he's done it in both of these games, really. And, I mean, Dak finishes the game on 18 straight completions. You think he's comfortable in this offense? And they've got way more explosive this year, DJ, than they were a year ago, especially in the pass game. And obviously that's a credit to some of the personnel they have. But, man, now you don't get those opportunities to have that perfect balance without pretty good defense. And they had that against Washington, too. You hold a team under 260 total yards in this league, you're doing something right. So they did that. Look, it took them 6 weeks to score 9 offensive touchdowns a year ago. they've already got that mark through 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to argue with anything you just said. In fact, Orlovsky had tweeted out something about Kellen, and obviously he's known Kellen and played with him. So I went back, and I'm like, I know I've talked about Kellen Moore going to be a head coach in this league. So I like looked in Twitter, found it. So it was an original tweet from Ian Rappaport, and it said, one possibility for the Cowboys, something that allows the John Kitna interest to make sense, is to promote fast-rising QB coach Kellen Moore to offensive coordinator. At least that's in the discussion. So this is, this is on in January, and so I retweeted that, and I said, I've mentioned this before. Kellen Moore is a rising star. He'll be in the mix for head coaching gigs, college football or NFL, in the very near future. And the first comment underneath that is Orlovsky, who writes 100%, like exclamation point.
Yeah, 100, yeah.
So I texted it to Orlovsky, and I said, buddy, like, look, we're going to all hear when we're wrong, man. So when we get something cherish this.
You got to do it.
Enjoy this right now. But no, he fits my checklist.
Yeah.
So when people talk to me about, you know, future head coaches, and I just kind of look at some of the guys that have been successful in this new wave of coaches, think about how many things these guys have in common. And you look at, okay, former quarterback who's been around successful systems and successful or been mentored by successful coaches and been a part of winning organizations. But, I mean, you can kind of look at, you know, Sean Payton, who had been under Parcells, former quarterback, innovative, knows how to coach that position. Obviously, Sean McVay is at the top of that list. Doug Peterson is another one on that list. So trying to – Matt Nagy's another one who, you know, obviously things haven't gone as well this year as they were last year, but kind of fits that. All these guys are fitting that profile. And Kellen Moore is, like, literally the poster child for this, having, you know, played the position, been around Chris Peterson at the college level, who was very innovative, very creative, and then all the time he spent in the NFL as a backup. I mean, it's like this, he's going to be a quarterback. The other one's going to be is Kafka. Kafka's with the Chiefs, coaching quarterbacks.
We talked about that last year.
Quarterback from Northwestern.
Right.
Yes. These guys, it's like you can pick them out of a lineup.
Well, and for more, like, if Zach Taylor and Cliff Kingsbury got jobs after never calling plays in the NFL before last year,
there's another. Yeah,
Kellen Moore is going to get a head coaching job next year. Book it.
No, it's happening. I selfishly kind of was hoping he would go to college because I'd like to see him.
I'd love to see that.
Creative.
Yeah.
One of the great college quarterbacks there in Kellen Moore. But you're right. The Cowboys are rolling. Interested to see what happens to this injury news here on Michael Gallup. I'm sure we'll get an update on that later on in the day. But he's off to a good start. Hopefully he's all right. All right, let's get to the next one here. I want to keep things positive. Sometimes it's hard, Rhett. Miami, they might run the table, .. In reverse.
Now Fitzpatrick on third and two, rolling right, and he throws in traffic, intercepted, picked off by Gilmore, who is gone. Right down the middle, 25-20, goodbye, to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
Oh, boy.
So I'm doing the Charger game, Rhett, and it's a break in the action. So I pull up my computer and say, let me see what's going on around the NFL, look at some scores here. So I see the lopsided score in Miami, and I just click on the little team stats, right? Let's see what's going on here, and I tweet it out. Through three quarters, Miami's offense, 28 plays, 38 yards. I mean, that is next level futility, man. If you are trying to, I'll avoid the T word. I'll say if you're trying to increase your odds of securing the first overall pick, they are off to an incredible start down there in Miami.
DJ, why is Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I didn't see any of it.
How is it possible that Josh Rosen is this bad in practice to where he cannot start for this team? Like, is that, I mean, that's got to be what we're talking about here, right? That's the only reason why he's not playing is he's not performing in practice, right?
Well, look.
I know they've got bigger problems. I know they've got bigger problems. I mean, maybe that's the thing. Maybe they don't want
to
hurt the kid.
I've been to some carnivals, Rhett.
Yeah.
Normally when you go to a carnival or maybe a kid's party, you can sign up to hit the pinata. I never had an opportunity to sign up to be the pinata. And that is what they're doing right there at the quarterback position. Josh Rosen might be like, hey, you know what, Ryan? Hey, go get him, pal. I'll let you go ahead and take that beating. I'll just wait for my next team.
Right. That's the only other possible conceivable option is that, look, they're like, look, we're not good enough for, you know, Rosen to come in here and just get thrown into the, you know, into the lion's den. I mean, that's the only other thing I can think of.
Seven sacks.
What, nice. Four picks?
Not good. Right, let's not.
All right, we won't dwell on
it. It's just a really bad team. I don't want to. I just wanted to get that out there that this is, you know, it's just some irony there with the 72 Dolphins.
Yeah.
And
then
they could go the other way.
The streak continues for New England. They have not allowed a touchdown in three straight games going back to the Super Bowl. So yeah,
they've given up 6 points in the last three games.
How's that defense working out for you? Pretty solid. All right, I'll get us to takeaway number four, shall I? And that is that the Colts will not go quietly.
Now it's fourth down and two, and this is the game with 15 seconds left to go. Here we go. Mariota backs to throw, throws left side, and it's incomplete! It's incomplete on a slant pattern to A.J. Brown. Quincy Wilson on coverage for the Colts, and the Colts are going to win it. The Colts will win in week two.
So this is interesting to me because the Colts are just a tough team, man. And I feel like the Colts and the Titans are very similar. They're two tough teams. They're not going to be super flashy, although, you know, the Colts obviously had a ton of chunk plays against the Chargers in week one. But they're just a tough-minded team. They're always going to be competitive. Their defense kept it close enough in the second half so that the only points that the Colts scored in the second half were the ones to go ahead and take the go-ahead lead. Obviously, they had the Vinatieri extra point issues, which caused some trouble for them, you know, in the early part of this game, trying to keep things together. And that'll be a storyline, obviously, that we're going to watch throughout the day. A lot of speculation on whether it's time for Vinatieri to hang it up and whether he's thinking about that. But look, I think if you let the Colts hang around, it's going to bite you. They are going to come back. And Jacoby Brissett, you know, yeah, he's no Andrew Luck, but man, he's doing what his team needs him to do to be put in a position to win football games.
I think now that Jacoby Brissett's there instead of Andrew Luck, and I look at these two teams in this division, and it's appropriate that this was a 19-17 game.
That's what,
because
yeah.
they are darn near carbon copy of each other.
That's what I'm
and
saying.
To me, they feel Rhett to me like a high floor, low ceiling operation, which means these teams feel to me like 9.
Yep.
Maybe even 10 win teams, potential postseason teams that absolutely nobody's going to be afraid to play once they get into the postseason.
Right.
Because they're going to be physical. They're going to be in every single football game. They're going to play a lot of close games. But once you get into the postseason, 9 times out of 10, you're going to see the elite quarterbacks. You're going to see the elite pass rush kind of elevate their teams. And I just don't think that either one of these teams are elite in those areas. So that to me is going to be, you know, the challenge for them. It's a physical brand of football. I like watching it because it's an old school approach and just kind of mash people, especially, you know, when the Titans get Taylor Lewan back, that'll help them become even more physical. But I don't know where the ceiling is for these teams.
I think you put it perfectly there. They're so similar. They're probably 9-win teams that might sneak into the playoffs. I think week 13 will have a great idea of where both of these teams stands when they play each other again. And it's going to be like, well, one's either going to push forward and one's going to kind of start to settle back at that point. But that's going to be an interesting division.
Look at the conference, though. Like, you talk about the division, talking about, okay, and you start seeing the Chiefs and the Patriots and even the Chargers, like, these teams have a chance to be explosive, like, really explosive offensively, and they can get after you.
There's a pretty big drop-off.
At least, you know, the Patriots, the way they're playing defense right now is on a completely other level. So, anyways, it'll be interesting to watch that race take place in that division. I think it's going to be a very competitive division from start to finish. Yeah. Speaking of the AFC, let's get over to the Baltimore Ravens and the offensive show they've put on for 2 weeks. My takeaway, Mark Andrews, he's really emerging as an elite tight end.
At the Arizona 27, Hollywood Brown goes in motion, sweeps behind Lamar Jackson, who pumps to the right, looking for the end zone, fires down the sideline. He's got Mark Andrews. Touchdown, Ravens! Mark Andrews wide open down on the sideline.
So that was almost like a switch route there. You see a lot of those verticals, and you'll see him switch. It almost looks like a scissors, and that was one that they hit Andrews on that touchdown. But going back and watching that tape, Rhett, I think I sent you a text this morning. We're going to talk about it on the aftermath. But the fact that Andrews was a key part when they went empty. So he had 8 catches in this game. 4 of those catches, half of them, came when they emptied out the formation, and they let him just go to work in the middle of the field. It's a nice, simple read, simple throw for Lamar Jackson, and they were able to tear people up. Actually, Lamar missed a couple other opportunities where they were in empty working in the middle of the field. But this is a player, Mark Andrews. Look, they have so many tight ends, and you look at Andrews for 8 for 112. Nick Boyle caught a ball in this game.
Yeah.
You look at
Hurst
caught a touchdown in this game.
Yeah.
So they can get a lot of guys out and make things happen with that tight end position. And real quick on the quarterback, Lamar, you saw, you know, pick your poison, right? Last week, the Miami Dolphins, they tried to sell out, play zero coverage, and force him to throw. Hollywood Brown, they hit some big plays, and he was outstanding. This week, they decide, okay, we're going to try and take away Mark Ingram. Yeah. We're going to play back on you. And so, look, Lamar missed some throws, but he also had you know, some big-time throws in the middle of the field as well as even outside the numbers. And then you saw what he can do running the football, 16 for a buck 20. You want to take away Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson's going to eat. So it's a very difficult offense to prepare for. In Baltimore, I do want to couch it with this one thing. You've played the team with the first pick this year, the Arizona Cardinals, who you just played. And you've beaten the team who's going to have the first pick next year in the Miami Dolphins. So they're going to step up. And they're going they're not just stepping up in competition. They're stepping all the way up when you look at them going to take on the Chiefs next week. I cannot wait for that one.
Oh, man, is that going to be fun. I'm absolutely with you on that. And, look, Andrews, 8 catches on 9 targets. You know, I mean, like every time I see that, the catch target efficiency is so impressive. And for Lamar, I mean, 120 yards rushing after just 3 yards rushing a week ago. He just proves that he might be a little bit like the Patriots are as an offense. You know, like, let me know, like, which way do you want me to play, and I'll beat you. You know, I'll figure out a way. I'll be a chameleon.
No question.
So that was cool. All right, I'll get us back to takeaway. Another takeaway here. It's the Seahawks are still dangerous.
Russell takes the snap, looks far side. He's going to throw downfield. He's got Metcalf. He's got a touchdown, Seahawks. DK Metcalf one-on-one down the far sidelines. Good luck. Perfect pass by Russell Wilson.
Metcalf is another story that I will get to here in just a second. But if there was any doubt about the Seahawks after week one, where they were held under 200 passing, under 100 rushing, they answered the bell this week on the road against Pittsburgh. Russ was nearly flawless, almost a perfect passer rating. Plus, defense was way better this week for Seattle. They allowed just under 260 total yards. So, it was not, you know, one of those dominating ground performances that we've seen from Seattle, but they did enough to eat up some clock, put themselves in a good position to allow Russell to go for 300 through the air. And I just, like, you know, they answer the bell. Russ is there when they need him to make plays, and he did that down the stretch. They're going to be in the mix. There's no way you can ever count this Seahawks team out.
Yeah, and they're a combination of three things. They're physical, they're efficient, and they're explosive. Yeah. And that is a dangerous combination to use your danger, Russ.
And they're getting more explosive with DK.
Yeah. No doubt. And DK, DK's still not somebody who's going to run every route on the route tree. You don't need him to.
Right.
We talk about building a basketball team. He is your power forward. You saw what he could do after the catch. You saw him get vertical from the slot on that touchdown. He actually made a nice adjustment down the field. Now, is he going to be able to drop his weight, get in and out of breaks, and run comebacks and curls in a real efficient manner? No. You've got other guys to do that, to supply that in their individual roles. But he is going to play a very important role for this football team, and it's going to be fun to watch. I thought, you know, so much success is predicated on fit, and that is a perfect fit with DK Metcalf, Russell Wilson in this offense.
And he dominates the AFC North, by the way. 19 touchdowns to 1 interception in his career against the AFC North. Something about it, man. And you want to talk about, you know, we say the AFC North is a toughness division. Russ kind of took that personally, it sounds like.
Hey, no doubt. He was outstanding. Yeah. All right, next one for me. Jimmy G threw 3 touchdowns, that is.
Play action, they boot Garoppolo. Dunlap is there. A throwback left. Wide open. Marquise Goodwin's got it. Touchdown! San Francisco!
And wide open. What a play call.
It's hard for me not to hear touchdown. You're waiting for Raiders to just roll off his tongue.
Right.
And then he's gone over across the bay to the 49ers. But look, this is a team. I don't want to say I'm not rooting for them, but man, I put a lot of my credibility on the line saying I think this team's got a chance to be a really, really good football team. Not only a playoff team, but somebody you wouldn't necessarily want to play in the postseason.
Right.
Because of their improved quarterback play with Jimmy being healthy finally, as well as their improved pass rush, which is that's kind of the pillars of championship football, in my opinion. I think this team's got a chance to be really good. I know, look, the Bengals, they were competitive last week with the Seahawks, but low expectations for them. But I love Kyle Shanahan as a play caller. I love some of the pieces they have in place. And this run game, Rhett, I'm telling you, it is the run scheme that everybody in the NFL studies. It's the Kyle Shanahan, obviously coming down from his father.
Yep.
He runs it better than anybody else, and they are rolling right now. Unfortunately, the Joe Staley injury takes a little bit of the shine off of this
fibula.
Win, but this is a team that's got a chance to be really good.
Well, and it's not how we drew it up either. You know, it's not McKinnon and Coleman. It's Mostert and Breida. You know, I mean that's a credit.
How about Jeff Wilson?
Well, sure, throw him in the mix too. But I mean, like they did things in this game.
Two touchdowns.
They did things in this game that we were talking about. You know, Ingram and Kamara doing all season long, which is pretty darn impressive. A year ago for the Saints, 259 yards rushing. No question that is the envy of the league. And then I love seeing Deebo Samuel get into the end zone. And they're still missing two guys that can be some, you know, real role players for him. Obviously, Trent Taylor is a pretty good darn player in the slot. And then, you know, I'm just waiting to see what Kyle Shanahan wants to do with Jalen Hurd when he gets healthy, right? Because we saw it a little bit in the preseason. He's one of those kind of gadget kind of, you know, he's got a lot of different ways that he can be used. So I think we haven't even really scratched the surface of the potential for this team yet. They have almost 600 yards of total offense.
I'm with you. And they're going to get Nick Bosa healthy too. And I was talking to somebody in the league who was talking to one of their offensive linemen for the 49ers, and he was asking him about Nick Bosa, and he said, oh my gosh, he said, this guy is going to be a major problem for this league, you know, as he gets healthy. When he was healthy in camp, we could not block him. And I've talked to people in the personnel department there with the Niners who said the same thing. So if they can just get him healthy and rolling, I'm telling you, man, this is a good football team. It's kind of been had the injury bug, you know, over the last couple of years. Yeah. If they can get healthy, stay healthy, this is a dangerous team.
Yeah, I just hope they can recover from the Joe Staley loss. There actually isn't the left tackle listed behind him on their depth chart. But
that's not great.
Yeah,
not great. By the way, the fact that I did not have any issue with your whole danger Russ pun.
Oh,
and
come
then,
on!
And then you give me the ridiculous Jimmy G through three response.
Wait.
That's the low blow, man.
I got another one for you, Houston. We avoided a problem. Hey-oh!
Jacksonville going for the lead right here from the 2-yard line. Minshew with the gun, three receivers left. Handoff Fournette running left. And he's stopped. Justin Reed got in there. The D stiffens on the 2-point conversion try. The Texans have the lead 13-12 with 30 seconds left.
See, look, I love Mark Vandermeer. I thought he was a little subdued on that call. Like, that's the game right there.
I know.
You know? Look.
Look at you! You're doing play by play now.
You're kidding.
See how
I'm
this
kidding.
Is.
No. Mark is one of the absolute best in the business.
You hear that, Mark?
No,
Mark?
But look,
your friend Rhett
probably had to just make sure that thing didn't actually get across the goal line, right? It's like it's hard to be 100% over the top when you're not 100% that thing's going to stand. So that was a huge play. I mean, Justin Reed absolutely saved that ball game on the second effort by Fournette. But what I loved about it was that we saw Houston's defense win a game. You know, I mean, a week ago, I was like, whoa, where is this? And obviously, the Saints are a good offense. But a week ago, I was like, man, you know, in a big spot, you got to be able to count on a defense that has that many, you know, high profile marquee players like they do. So, you know, that was a little concerning. And look, you can't, if you're Houston, you cannot be 0-2 after you started 0-3 last year. I know they went on a 9-game win streak, but like you just can't keep digging yourself a hole and expect to get out of it. And look, Deshaun Watson is going to have better football games than what we saw in week two, and that I'm not worried about. But it felt good for me to see the Houston Texans defense rise to the occasion.
No doubt. Again, I said it earlier, I think this is a very competitive division that's going to come right down to the end of the season. And I think even Jacksonville has got a chance to rebound. They're going to be competitive, and they're not going to punt the season. So I think it's going to be a fun division to monitor as we go through the rest of the year.
Yeah.
It is weird, though, watching that Houston defense without Clowney.
It's the same punch.
I'm not used to it yet.
Yep.
Yeah. Not the same punch. All right.
We need a right. We need a reliever.
Let's bring in Buck.
Let's bring in the closer.
All right, so I'm in. I'm back in the game.
Yes, he's back.
There he is.
I'm closer.
Now we're talking.
I'm Mariano Rivera, and so I'm ready. I'm ready to kind of finish it off.
Show us what you got. What's your cutter?
Well, my cutter. Like,
what we got here, bud?
I'm coming high and hot. I'm gonna say the Saints need more grit.
Jared Goff brings his team to the line with Gurley behind him. He takes the snap. He tosses left. Gurley behind his block. Sprinty to the left side. And in! Touchdown, Todd Gurley. Touchdown, LA!
Hey, look, as well as the Rams played, and I thought they did a really solid job of kind of taking control of the game when the game was there for them. I think we have to talk about the Saints and the Saints being able to show a little level of resiliency. We knew with all the bad calls that have affected them that there was a bit of a carryover effect. And I still feel like when bad things go against them, they have a tough time of getting out of their own way. The Cam Jordan bad call, look, it should have been a touchdown. They should have been reviewable. I understand all of that. But at some point, the Saints have to be able to dig down and kind of fight through the adversity that is thrown their way. Drew Brees goes out and all the other stuff. I just would like to see them cut down on some of the penalties and find a way to kind of be a grinded out team. And I feel like Sean Payton alluded to that a little bit in his postgame presser.
Starts with him too, though, right?
Yeah. I thought that. I think there's definitely some blame there. Buck, I when I looked at this game, I haven't had a chance to go back and watch the tape on this one yet, so I'm looking forward to doing that. But the two things and just, you know, reading everything and watching what I was able to see on TV, didn't run the ball as well as I would have thought, especially after Brees went down. It's nice when you have a good offensive line, which they do, a very good offensive line. I like the offensive line to be able to carry you a little bit, get that run game cranked up. Weren't able to do that. And then just defensively, you talk about more grit. And I look, early in the season, to be expected, but the tackling wasn't good, man.
No.
The tackling was not good. So when you can't run the ball and you're not tackling well, that's a problem.
Guys, I think we need to just take a second here and read this statement that Mike Tomlin just released on Ben Roethlisberger. Had an MRI on his right elbow Sunday evening and was determined by the Steelers medical team that surgery will be required. We expect the surgery will be scheduled for this week. He is out for the season.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's big. So it's funny. Like,
wow.
And I'm not a medical expert, but when he was holding it, for some reason, when I'm watching the game, I'm like, man, I wonder if he's going to have Tommy John.
I said the same thing this morning.
The way that he was holding, I was like, man, I wonder if this is a Tommy John situation, because every throw he was having to go back and kind of rub on it and touch it and shake it out and the like. And it just reminded me of when you see pictures and it goes like.
Yeah. They're not saying exactly what it is, but to be out for the season. You know,
right away
before the surgery. It's a significant deal.
Significant injury.
All right, Mason, what you got?
So I will say this, like,
wow.
and we can get back to the Saints, but I'll say this about Mason Rudolph. I thought Mason Rudolph did a pretty solid job when he came in, considering he didn't have a lot of practice time. He got it, but I'm gonna be honest, and maybe we all kind of fed into the thing like addition by subtraction, whatever. But when I look at this wide receiver core with Juju and the like. These guys leave a lot of balls on the ground, like a lot of drop passes, a lot of
Moncrief.
Things. I mean,
why are we still throwing the ball?
Like a lot of things that you expect them to be able to do. I hate to say, hey, you remove 84 and everyone kind of falls apart, but they're not playing at a level that they can uplift and elevate a quarterback. And so Mason Rudolph played well enough to get them a winning performance, but he has to get the other guys to pick it up.
I agree. That's what I mentioned at the top of the show when we were just kind of talking about, you know, whether this was going to happen with Big Ben. You know, we weren't quite sure at that point. And then as we're doing this thing, you know, we learned that he's out for the season. So it's Mason Rudolph here from week three on for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have a tough stretch, as DJ mentioned. But I'm with you, man. He showed that the moment was not too big for him.
No, he did a pretty good job. I bet they wish they had probably held on to Josh Dobbs a little bit before
Right. Now, like, who's your backup?
Like moving in, because who's your backup and what do you do in that regard? It's tough sledding in Pittsburgh coming down the pipe.
Especially when you're not running
the
ball
well. You know what's interesting, guys, is, no doubt, but when you look at this, you think about that 04 quarterback class, right, with Eli Manning, Rivers, Roethlisberger. Now you've got Roethlisberger done for the year. Eli Manning, the paper's already calling for Daniel Jones to replace him. Philip just had one bad decision the other day, but he's still going to be fine. But you've got Brees, who's older, who now he's going to miss a bunch of time. Look, there's a reason, and I know, like, Ben got upset. Remember how upset he got when they took Mason Rudolph? Oh, we could have got somebody that could really help our football team right now, something along those lines. Man, as an organization, when you've got an older quarterback, it's negligent if you don't try and prepare for this situation. Now, I give the Saints credit for, you know, they believed in Teddy Bridgewater. They gave him top dollar as a backup to prepare themselves in case something were to happen with Drew Brees. Now, the jury's still out on that, whether or not, you know, Teddy is going to live up to the money that they gave him. The Chargers went got Tyrod Taylor.
I missed it. Okay.
Who gave him some, you know, gave Tyrod Taylor a good bit of money to protect themselves against something with Rivers. And so it's fascinating. We've had so many of these old quarterbacks. And, of course, the guy in New England is just, he's like a rubber band.
Just chopping away.
Pull him and stretch him any way you want, but he ain't going anywhere.
It is unbelievable because, DJ, for so long, the quarterback had been like, oh, you know, it's like a 10-year position. And we got to this point where we started viewing it like as a, oh, I want my quarterback to play 20 years. And that's, I mean, we've never been in pro sports where we've seen guys count on players playing 15 to 20 years. And so I do wonder if this would kind of bring us back to reality. Like, hey, when we make that franchise quarterback decision, we can think about one contract, two contracts, and maybe a third. But when they get to that third contract, you need to start thinking about, who is the next quarterback? Because you can't count on the guy to be your franchise quarterback for 20-plus years.
Well, and the Saints have been doing this for years now. I mean, you go back, what was it, 4 years ago, they drafted Garrett Grayson in the third round.
Trying to find guys.
Signing Teddy Bridgewater, trading for Teddy Bridgewater, and then signing him again. And just by the way, Garofolo, our pal here in NFL Network, said he was on the phone with the team personnel when the Roethlisberger news broke, said, obviously, huge loss because of his experience and what he's done. But with the way Mason Rudolph played in the preseason and yesterday, they'll be in better shape than a lot of other teams would be at, just to your point there, Deej. So tough
for
Roethlisberger.
That leak source, by the way?
No, I was not. I was not. I wish I was. I talked to Mason a bunch this preseason. Wow. He's been feeling it, man. He's been feeling really good about it. So, nice. I hate that he gets this opportunity this way.
If he plays well, I mean, I would say, I don't know if it's a hot take or not, but if he plays well, I mean, isn't this the time you kind of would turn the page if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, look.
He plays well throughout this string. You're not going to bring Ben back and give the keys back to him next year.
Yeah, it's a two-year thing, though, right? It wasn't a huge deal year-wise.
Gave him money. We just gave him big money, DJ.
Did. Look, it's kind of like the Peyton Manning thing, you know?
I'm just telling you, man.
The injury presented an opportunity.
At some point in time, obviously seeing it to the extreme with Miami. Right. But where's the place you don't want to be? It's stuck in the middle. You know, you're either chasing championships or you are rebuilding.
Right.
Being stuck in the middle is no bueno.
Nah, you're right.
All right, should we get back on track here, Buck?
Let's get back on track.
Yep. Buck, you got another one?
Yeah, I got another one. The Falcons playmakers carry the load.
Play clock at 3. Play clock at 2. Shotgun snap comes in on 4th down. Ryan throws left side. Julio Jones with a catch. Got a block. Uh-oh. And Jones on the loose to the 40. Breaks away at the 30. Down the left sideline to the 10. Looks over his shoulder at the 5. And flies in for 6. 53 yards. Julio Jones takes it the distance. And the Falcons take a 23-20 lead with 2:10 to play.
Man, you got to like that, huh? You got to like when your playmakers go a big fourth down. You need a play. You're able to throw a jailbreak screen
Golly.
To Julio Jones, and he goes the distance. But I think the thing that is more impressive is not just Julio Jones doing what he does. We expect that from him. But Calvin Ridley showing up, giving them 100 yards, two 100-yard receivers on the day, being able to kind of spread it around and do those things, and listening to Calvin Ridley after the game, just talking about how much he has learned from Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu and how those guys are pros and they've kind of set the table for him. And he's just trying to do whatever he can do to help the team win. For the Falcons, when I look at this team, I would like to think that they can be a physical team, but at the end of the day, they're going to be a finesse outfit. They're wide receivers. Are going to be the guys that kind of carry the load because we haven't seen Freeman be the same guy that we saw a couple years ago.
Right.
We need to see the Falcons kind of lean on their wide receivers until the running game steps up. So they may be a team that literally passes to set up the run.
Yeah.
And kind of they're able to do it in a different situation in the NFC South.
Hey, we got to include Jake Matthews in that list of playmakers. You see that block he laid on that jailbreak screen? I mean, it was like almost a block in the back, but it wasn't just enough to spring Julio. That was huge.
Big play. Got to like the big plays.
Yeah, look, they went the Eagles went aggressive on that play call, and I watched the tape this morning. You can see literally
that whole second half.
His hands go up on his on his headset like this as soon as he saw that ball completed. Like, oh no,
oh yeah.
Nobody
and then
there.
The other thing is a great example. Buck, this is a you ought to clip this for your high school team and show them the importance of pursuit angles because, yes, that was going to be a first down. It was a brilliant play call. But the backside defenders took such horrible
bad angles.
Instead of being a first down, it's a touchdown. And that to me, we talked earlier, Buck, when we were talking about the Chargers-Lions game, how the Lions, you know, making two plays in the red zone, you know, save the game for them in a football game. So if you can just get Julio Jones on the ground there, maybe, you know, who knows?
Yeah, they're always trying to give yourself a chance. And it's funny you talked about the Chargers game because that did show up. The fact that the Lions were able to get Austin Ekeler down, and was it Jackson that also broke out? They were able to kind of rally him down or some of those plays.
Austin Ekeler fumbled at the one jumping in, and then you have a pick in the end zone at the end of the game.
So, Darius Slay, bad throw.
Huge
yeah,
swings. Yeah.
Like being able to get
no doubt
those things out. But, yeah, it is all about angles or whatever. But I will say this. The Eagles, I give the Eagles a ton of credit because all of their playmakers are on the shelf. Like, they're done or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if not for and Nelson Aguilar drop pass, like, who knows? They probably could and maybe should have won this game. I mean, so it's tough. But Carson Wentz, the playmakers, they still have the connection with Zach Ertz. They're able to make plays. It's just a matter of finding the rhythm. The thing that I believe all these teams are trying to do the first month of the season is kind of find out who you are and what your identity is on offense and defense.
Yeah, and look, the last thing I'll say on the Eagles is, look, I know they had the injuries to Jeffrey and to Jackson during the game, but how long do you feel like the Eagles can continue to live and die both with the good and bad of Carson Wentz's risk-taking with the throws and then the possibility of him getting banged up in one of those plays? I mean, like, if we were talking about him trying to protect himself a little bit more this year compared to, it doesn't look that way to me. And I know he's got to play his way, man, but that's dangerous.
It is dangerous. I think the big thing, Doug Peterson and that staff has to figure out, they got to figure out a way to balance up the way they approach it. Like, they have to have a semblance of a running game to be able to offset it. So when Carson is throwing, he's able to throw when they want to throw, not when they have to throw. The pitch count for him, I still say 30 to 32 throws. I wouldn't like him to get much north of that just because you have to kind of protect him against himself. And the more that you drop back to throw, the more susceptible he's going to be to kind of make one of those risky plays and kind of expose himself to a big shot that he doesn't need to be exposed to.
There was a few of them in that game, though.
Yeah, I'll leave on that one, you guys. I thought I thought actually Carson, man, if you include some of the drops and throw those yardage totals in there, I thought he made some big time plays.
Sure
man.
Did.
There's some MVP type plays in there. You're seeing that version of him come out, but they didn't have a run longer than 5 yards in this game. So they have got to find a way to run the football. All right, football is back. Watch live and local primetime NFL games for free all season long with the Yahoo Sports app or the official app of the NFL on your phone or tablet. Plus, get all your latest breaking news, highlights, and more. Download the NFL app or the Yahoo Sports app in your app store or at NFL.com/mobile today. Certain restrictions and data rates may apply. Buck, we're going to run out of here, but I do want, once we finish up here, for you to get the full story since you missed it on Rhett getting hurt during an Uber ride,
God.
which is challenging to say the least.
Yeah. Thankfully, I've been able to persevere and just kind of push through. You know, calling the Army game and watching those guys play really inspired me.
So, yeah, how about that? I taped
that's
it.
Right. That's right.
I taped it. I taped the game. I taped the game because I like Army. And so
there you go.
I get a chance to hear you on the call. I'm excited about it.
Oh, man. That's big.
There we go.
Big. Still can't feel my
all
thumb.
Right. All right, guys. All right, let's get out of here. Remember, you can check out Move the Sticks podcast on NFL.com/podcast, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. And be on the lookout. Our podcast, the remainder of this week, I think we might focus on a little game that's taking place in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Bring on a couple coaches. Mac Brown from North Carolina. Eli Drinkwitz from App State as the Bucky DJ Bowl takes place this Saturday. Rhett, you're Switzerland. You're not allowed to take a side.
I'm neutral.
And we're going to really, really have fun with this one. We got to come up with what's on the line here for us. We're going to come up with something good. All right, boys, let's get out of here. Thank you guys for all your work. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.